This is 89.9 WWNO. Another weekend is fast approaching. Do you have plans? Well, if you need a little help, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a challenging exhibit, an artistic happy hour, a good read, or a little something off the beaten path, we've got answers. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Save the date, Wednesday, September 5th. That's when the 4th annual Culture Collision kicks off a citywide celebration of New Orleans' cultural season. The party, billed as a happy hour with a purpose, continues to grow. Jess Brown, one of the original co-founders, remembers the event's humble beginning.
It's almost incomprehensible. It's gotten to be so big. You know, 4 years ago we started out and we just wanted to kind of bridge the gap between all of the arts organizations in town. So we said, let's have a party. And it has just morphed into this giant thing. I had to cut it off at 61 arts organizations from around the area. And I'm getting calls every day of people asking. And it's just gotten so big that this year we actually had to change the location. We've been at NoMA for the past 3 years and we were out of room. So many people wanted to participate and attend that we had to upgrade. So this year we're setting up at Generations Hall, and it's going to be huge.
More than 2,000 people are expected for the cocktail party that's sprinkled with a big dose of cultural offerings.
Arts organizations from your biggest ones in town, the New Orleans Opera, Loyola University's Montage Series, down to the New Orleans Film Festival, the Photo Alliance, Craft Mafia, pretty much every arts and cultural organization that we could reach is going to be there, and they will have information about their upcoming season, what they're doing. It'll be an opportunity for these groups to recruit volunteers, to attract new audience members. A lot of the organizations do free giveaways throughout the evening that can range from tickets to upcoming events that they have on season to they've actually put pieces of art up for the giveaways. Some people do merch from their gift stores, and it's a great networking opportunity because, I mean, if 2,000 like-minded individuals who are interested in the arts are in one venue, you're going to meet a lot of good people.
And Brown says all that schmoozing is good not only for the arts community, but for the city of New Orleans as well.
The arts are such an essential part of New Orleans history, and the history of the people here. We are a city that thrives on good music, good art, good food. And the arts and cultural organizations really are the soul of the city. We're what make this place such a wonderful place to live and such a unique place to live. So it is essential to the success of New Orleans that arts and cultural organizations continue to thrive and continue to excel. And it's essential that we continue to develop our audiences and enlighten the community as to all of the offerings, not just the big stuff, but everything that's going on in this city. And that's what Culture Collision does. We just want to share with everyone how great New Orleans is.
Don't forget your dancing shoes, as DJ Matty will be on hand for a jamming good time.
His music selection is so vibrant and fun. It doesn't appeal to just one generation. You know, he really makes it a good time. And people come out and they dance.
And the fun doesn't stop there. An after party with avant-garde composer, pianist, and singer Ratty Skirbix follows in the big room.
He has a huge following in this area. So he's actually going to start the after party at 8 o'clock. And he's going to do a solo one-man show with the piano. And then at 9 o'clock, he actually has a trio, so the members of his trio are going to join him.
You can network with over 60 visual and performing arts organizations as WWNO hosts the 4th Annual Culture Collision at Generations Hall, 310 Andrew Higgins Drive, 5:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m., Wednesday, September 5th. Admission is free. Lots of high energy there, and across town at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, which is one of the more than 5 dozen arts organizations participating in Culture Collision. Writer Ian McNulty, who produces WWNO's Community Impact Series, recently visited the nonprofit organization to see how it is using creative ideas and making a difference in our community.
Touching the toes, walking it out.
Gazelle Naked leads a community dance class early one evening at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center in the Central City neighborhood of New Orleans. The class is called Sisters Making a Change, and as the name suggests, the ladies who participate in this free weekly gathering get more than a few dance moves. They hear from experts on health topics, they share a healthy meal, and they bask in a sense of togetherness, as Gazelle explains.
So not only do they get the opportunity to dance and talk and socialize with each other, they get to commune together and eat together. So dance and movement and health, they get to learn about things that affect themselves and their families.
That's right on target for Ashe. This nonprofit, housed in a former department store, draws inspiration from arts culture to fuel the broader idea of a community's culture, one with the power to improve people's lives and change their way of seeing and living in the world. Here's Carol Bebel, the center's co-founder and executive director.
Rooting and fertilizing anything in culture makes it work better, you know. And so we began to dream of a way to be able to essentially to program and to create events that did that. The only place where there is anything close to a curriculum for being able to really live in a diverse world is happening in the cultural framework. And so that is one of the major ways in which we make an impact in the world, is that we really teach people how to accept folks for the gifts that they have, the look that they have, and the culture that they bring.
Ashe is deeply rooted in African-American culture. Visit the center, and this evidence is everywhere, from the art in the windows, to the fabrics and jewelry displayed on its walls, to the theater pieces, music performances, film screenings, book discussions, seminars, and classes held under its roof. The goal is to help people get past racial prejudice and reconnect with a fuller sense of their identity, to bridge the racial divide across communities.
And our motto then is the past we inherit, but the future we create. And that we are really very intentionally working to do just that, to create a different future for ourselves and the community that we represent. And it's not something we can do like singularly by ourselves. It's something that we have to do with other people who are not like us, because it's about really being able to claim the respect that you're due and then to also require it from others.
At Ashe, it turns out the path to such goals can be as fun and rewarding as dancing to the music, as Gazelle Naked and the ladies at Sisters Making a Change prove when they gather each week.
To be here and to teach these ladies is like my joy. It's something I do every day. I wake up to do this every day.
Learn more about the Ashe Cultural Arts Center at WWNO.org. For WWNO, I'm Ian McNulty.
The Community Impact Series with writer Ian McNulty is made possible with support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. The kinetic sculptures of New Orleans-based artist Lynn Emery are sprinkled in public places throughout the city. The sculptor and her highly polished metal works that move with the forces of nature are the subject of a lavishly illustrated new biography by critically acclaimed art writer Philip Palmedo. WWNO's Fred Kasten, who produces The Sound of Books, recently chatted with Palmedo about his new work titled simply Lynn Emery.
Philip Palmedo grew up in New York City.
I was very lucky in that my parents would take me to the Metropolitan Museum in New York and so forth. But it was really in college when I studied art history at Williams College that I got a deep interest in art.
Especially sculpture.
People sometimes ask me why I got so interested in sculpture as opposed to painting. I like painting a lot. But somehow, from the very beginning, I felt an attraction to sculpture, to the tangible quality, and the kind of independence of sculpture as an artistic object.
Philip Palmetto earned a Ph.D. in physics from MIT, then enjoyed a very successful career in physics and later business. Palmetto's work occasionally required him to write, which he found he liked. And about a decade ago, he started writing books about sculpture and sculptors. 3 years ago, in a fine piece of serendipity, Palmetto and his wife just happened to take the same Rhine River cruise as Lynn Emery, whose work he had known for some time and admired. Palmetto sought out Emery, and before long, they were talking about the possibility of a book.
It's a delicate matter, frankly, because it's a significant commitment on both of our parts, and we're both it's a risk we're both taking, right? Because this would be the first book that she has had written about her, and she's putting her work, in a way, in my hands. And I'm committing to a year of my life to try to understand and present, communicate what her work is all about. But she knew a couple of the people who I'd written about before. She checked me out, I checked her out. And fortunately, we all agreed it would be a good thing to do.
And Palmetto quickly discovered that Lynn Emery's personal history is as compelling as her art.
She was working as a reporter in Paris, freelance reporter, and was asked to do an article on sculpture, which she knew nothing about. But she noticed that across the street from her hotel, there was a sculptor's studio, so she wandered in there, hoping to just get some information about what sculpture was about. And it turned out to be the studio of Osip Zadkine, who was at that time probably one of the most prominent cubistic sculptors in the world. And she liked what she saw and signed up for his class. He taught his students in a realistic mode, and particularly in a simplified style. He thought very highly of Egyptian sculpture. Simplification of style is something that I think has carried through Lynn's work. Maybe it was because of Zadkine, maybe it was because she had an inclination from the very beginning for that mode.
That 1 year with Zadkine in Paris in the late 40s would be the only formal instruction in sculpting Lynn Emery ever had.
She was really independent from the age of 15. And one of the things I try to do in this book and others is to relate the personality to the artistic evolution of an artist and to the artist's work. I think independence is one of the things that has characterized Lynn's work.
And publisher Hudson Hills has done a superb job of illustrating Emery's work in Lynn Emery.
It's a beautifully produced book. You know, it's really satisfying for a writer. I don't have much control once I turn in a manuscript to the publisher. I kibitz, I say, you know, this should be here, this should be there. But it's really a delight when a book comes out of this quality, reflecting the care of very good editors and publishers.
Writer Philip Palmetto, author of the widely acclaimed, highly recommended new volume, Lynn Emery. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
Fred Kasten's The Sound of Books can be heard Wednesday mornings at 7:35 on WWNO. A stereotype can be described as an actor typecast in a particular role. It can also be an offensive or exaggerated generalization used to describe a group of people. It is the latter definition that is the subject of an exhibit at Staple Goods. New Orleans printmaker Katrina Andry examines stereotypes in her latest work, Otherness and American Values.
Mainly I'm exploring how they're ingrained into our culture and how they shape our values and how they shape our culture and shape how we see one another and how we evaluate our surroundings almost immediately, based on that tradition of stereotyping each other.
I asked Andrea, who holds a Master's of Fine Arts degree from LSU, how she came to focus on the historical aspects of stereotypes perpetuated against peoples of color.
Living in the South didn't hurt, and being a minority and being a woman definitely didn't hurt. It's a part of life, and I feel like artists always have something to say and to communicate to their audience, and that just spoke very loudly in my life. And I think I'm not alone. So it was something that I became really interested in grad school. And the more that I read about it, the more that I became interested in, well, what's the history of this? And how did this come around? And what's the purpose? What purpose do they have? And how do they shape our laws? How do they shape our culture? And so I just kept reading. And I also had a studio visit when I was at LSU with Kara Walker. She's a printmaker. She lives in New York. Her work evolves around the same issues, more or less. She gave me a lot of good feedback.
As you walk into the gallery at Staple Goods, you will see life-size prints addressing a variety of issues.
They're about 4 feet by 5 feet printmaking, and they're all, with three exceptions that are small lithographs, they're all against a quilt setting background. And the quilt serves a purpose. It's a traditional tool in America to tell stories. I mean, the Amish use it to tell stories. I think the colonial times women used it to tell stories. So I'm bringing that traditional format of storytelling and adding a modern element. So you'll see a bunch of images, a lot of people staring at you, not really in a confrontational way, but just almost daring you to look at them.
The issues Andrea challenges run the gamut from
love and marriage, the issues of money and welfare, issues of relationships in general, be it friendships and be it someone that you're intimate with, the issue of how do you make your American dream come true in America when you're a person of color, and also the issue of crime and laws, how our judicial system is shaped and can be biased.
Andrea's works are color reduction woodcuts.
I would carve out the image, carve out all the white, and then print, and then carve out the next color, then print, and then carve out all in the same block of wood until you kill the wood, and then the piece is done.
Andrea is very careful to let viewers know these works are about perception and not reality. To that effort, she uses white males in blackface.
I'm not trying to perpetuate stereotypes. I'm giving the impression that something is happening, that these people are dressed up, they're made up in blackface, and they have wigs on normally, and their shape is altered. To poke fun at the stereotype in a way of like, wow, yeah, that's weird, that stream of thought even exists. And I don't want it to be a minority in that position, because I think that would give off the perception that I was perpetuating stereotypes and not trying to point them out.
In the end, Andrea says, sadly, stereotypes will probably be with us for some time to come.
I'm hoping that people just come away with a fresh perspective. People realize that stereotypes exist, that they affect us, that it is a part of our thought process. And I'm just hoping to just bring that to the forefront of people's minds again when they leave the exhibit, you know, just to point at something they already know. They could think about it again, maybe get a fresh perspective on how they continue.
Katrina Andrea's Otherness and American Values is on view at Staple Goods, 1340 St. Rock Avenue, Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. We have a little something extra for you in our Lanyap Corner. Due to the storm in the Gulf, Southern Rep Theater has postponed 3x3, the one acts, which were scheduled to run through tomorrow night at Mid-City Theater. New dates will be announced later this week.
Also, Southern Rep Theater's 2012-2013 season announcement, which was to take place tonight at the CAC's Spun Cafe, will be delayed until further notice. We have an update on the Sanger Theater. According to a statement from the Ace Theatrical Group, construction and restoration efforts are proceeding as planned. The stage house is being expanded, which will allow for larger productions and a wide range of programs. They are stripping away layers of paint and veneer inside the theater and restoring it to the original color palette. Architects are working to recreate the theater's original interior look and feel, including the decorative elements and ornamentation, windows and doors, light fixtures, and poster boxes. Construction is on track, expected to be complete in June 2013. Announcement on the season is expected in spring 2013. The project is a public-private partnership between the City of New Orleans, Canal Street Development Corporation, and Ace Theatrical Group. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.